Welcome to the Subject Composition and Light Photography Podcast. Show notes, links, and contact details can be found at robnunphoto.com. That's www.robnunphoto.com. SCL is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network, and loads of other great tech podcasts can be found over at www.techpodcast.com. Now on with the show. Hello and welcome to episode 110 of the Subject Composition and Light Photography Podcast. My name's Rob from robnunphoto.com, and this is my little podcast about learning to become a better photographer and sharing those experiences with everybody else. Right, what have we got to talk about tonight? Well, we've got two film cameras, funnily enough. We've got the Fujifilm Instax Mini 7, which I picked up from the car boot sale this morning, and my report back on the shots from my old Kodak Retina 35mm viewfinder camera that I got last year, I think it was, from the car boot sale as well. And I finally got some shots developed from that one for boots during the week. So I want to talk about that. But first, the Fujifilm Instax Mini 7. Now, as you know, in the last few podcasts I've been talking about how I've bought some Polaroid cameras and Instant Fuji cameras, starting off with the, what did I get first? I got the Instax 200, then I got the Polaroid 600 Spice Girls cam, and then I think last week I got the Land Camera Model 1000, or the One Step as it's called in the States. And today I got the pièce de résistance, which was the Fujifilm Instax Mini 7. But let's take a step backwards and kind of talk a little bit more about the story sort of behind instant photography, at least recently anyway. As you probably know, Polaroid's been famous for instant photography for a long, long time, but the company went bust a couple of few years ago, and I think it was in 2009 they stopped making film for their instant cameras. But one company that's been carrying on sort of making film for their instant cameras has been Fujifilm, and Fujifilm have also started to make the new Polaroid camera, which is the Polaroid 300, I think. And one of my favourite podcasts I listen to, and I do the show notes for, is the Film Photography Podcast, and Mike Russo in that one is always going on about Polaroid and taking film, taking shots with his instant cameras. So I've kind of got the bug a little bit and wanted to have a crack at it. I used the 600 series Polaroid camera a long time ago, but one thing I always remember was how expensive the film was to buy. And if you go on eBay now and try and look up sort of Polaroid film, most of it is all expired anyway, but it's all very, very expensive. But one camera that has got fairly cheap instant film is the Fujifilm Instax Mini series, because Fujifilm make two types of consumer, I guess you'd call it, instant film. You get the Instax, which is the wide stuff, which is a little bit bigger than ordinary sort of Polaroid 600 size that we all remember, and they do the Instax Mini, which is credit sized instant photographs. And the Instax Mini photographs, if you buy them sort of bulk, you know, two to four packs or more at a time, you can get it down to about 50p a shot, which is fairly reasonable. I mean, it's not the end of the world. It's sort of affordable for the occasional photograph. So I wanted to get my hands on one. But when you watch them on eBay, they can go for quite a lot of money. There's plenty of Instax Mini cameras on there, but there's lots of buy it nows for like £50 to £70 with film and stuff like that. And you'll see the occasional buy it now come up for sort of £30 to £40. But you know, it's a little bit expensive for my taste for a little instant camera. So I thought, well, I'll look out for them at the car boot sales. I don't think I'd ever see one, because they've never been that popular in the UK, the Instax Minis, and they've been relatively expensive. But would you believe it? Today, after me and Suzanne walked around three car boot sales, and if you've been to a car boot sale, you know how much of a needle in a haystack it is to find stuff you're looking for. You know, you can look for weeks and weeks, months and months, and never find whatever you really, really, really fancy having. But today, after walking around three car boot sales, and we finally ended up at Burlesdon car boot sale, which we don't go to very often. But we went there today, and it's a huge car boot sale set on. It's on a bit of the side of a hill, and you've got to walk up and down, up and down. And there was loads of great film cameras there, old sort of film cameras. But I kept my eyes out for anything interesting. Didn't see anything, and we got right to the end. And it's a bit of a drive back to where we live from Burlesdon. So I said, you know, I just need to go to the toilet. So I sort of started walking down to the loos, and just happened to look across to one of the stalls that I'm sure I looked at on the way in. And lo and behold, there's a box there with a Fuji Instax Mini in it. So I went, whoa! So this was the last stall in the last place we were going to, on the last row of the last car boot. So I kind of strolled over nonchalantly, as you do. And I had a quick chat with a chap there and said, oh, is that one of those instant cameras? And he said, yeah. I said, does it work? He said, yeah. I said, oh, yeah, I fancy having a go with them. I said, how much do you want for it? And he said, £5. And I thought, so I didn't even bother looking in the box. I just sort of gave him a fiver. It looked like it was there. And took it. And when we got back to the car, I was sort of feverishly opening it up to have a look. And I discovered not only did it have the original batteries in there, so I don't think this thing's ever been used. But it also had a pack of Instax Mini film, that had an expiry date of 2005. So I thought, oh, but at least I've got some, and the Instax Mini film's a lot cheaper than the Instax film, so, you know, I could always buy some on eBay or something like that. But anyway, what we've been doing today is playing around with the camera, and I've taken about 8 photographs with it, actually. Taken a couple outside, and loads of sort of fun pictures of me, Suzanne and Oliver, and it's really brilliant, it's really, really cool. The photographs are coming out great, so even though the film is 5 years past its expiry date, it still works. The only photograph I didn't have a good exposure on was one I took outside of the local church, and that's because I didn't read the instructions properly on how you're meant to use the camera. And what you're meant to do, well, so let me take a step backwards from that. Basically, the camera is a fixed sort of focal length lens, so it has sort of infinity focus. You don't have to focus it, and it focuses from about 0.6 meters or 60 centimeters through to infinity. You put the film in the back, you put some batteries, 4 AAs in the side, and literally all you have to do is you turn it on by pulling the lens out, and then you simply point, well, what you're meant to do is you point the camera at your subject and look at the top of it. And if you see the little green light come on, what you do is that means it's okay to take a picture. So, for example, inside now, the little green light's on. So when I press if I were to press the button and take a picture, the flash would go off, and the film would pop out the top. But there's also a couple of other little on the dial, a couple of little icons. There's one with a cloud, one with a sun, and one with a really bright sun. And if you see, if when you're pointing the camera at the subject, say that the one with the bright sun is flashing, that means you have to turn the wheel to that particular setting. And what that means is that you're changing the aperture, making it tighter, obviously, to reduce the amount of light coming onto the film, so you get a properly exposed shot. Now, I didn't realise this, and so when I took one of the shots, it came out really overexposed and white. Now, there is actually a video on my photo stream on YouTube, if you look for Scale Speeders photo stream, and you can see this, and it's quite funny because you see me go off and take the photograph, and then you see me coming back with this little credit sized photograph waiting for it to go dark, when it's never going to go dark because it's overexposed, but then it sort of cuts out and you see me with another one that you do see go. And the photographs take, I don't know, probably about 5 minutes to kind of fully develop, but I have noticed looking at them sort of throughout the day that they are, the colours seem to be getting really, really good. And one of the first pictures I took of Oliver earlier on today, I'm looking at it now, I mean, obviously they're really small photographs, but the colours are really rich, the skin tones look great, and they're really great little cameras, definitely. And so, yeah, having loads of fun with the Instax Mini. And as I say, you can pick up the film. Normally, it's about a tenner for two packs, and each pack normally has 10 10 photos in it. So you know, it's not unreasonable, 50p a shot, I don't think, for a bit of a fun camera. I mean, it's never going to be a landscape camera, but for taking lots of portraits of walking around with the family and stuff like that, it is excellent indeed. Now, I did get another camera from the car boot sale today, and it's a Nikon Coolpix 4100 that is very old by the look of it, but it's a digital. But I saw it on our stall and they wanted a fiver for it, and I looked at it and it's a bit bashed, but the lens looks clean. It works and everything. But the reason why I got it as well is it takes ordinary SD cards and it takes ordinary AA batteries. So you may be asking yourself, well, why do I need another little digital camera when I've got my digital camera on my phone? Well, the problem I have is that on my lovely HTC Desire phone that, you know, does everything and is brilliant and fantastic, the little cover on the back with the clear bit in that goes over the lens has started to almost fog up a little bit, and you might have noticed this from my photos on my photo stream on Flickr. A few of the photos that I've taken with the phone are very misty and dreamy, and that's because of this, the fact that this sort of cover has got almost like fine small scratches on it, and what you're seeing in the photos is extreme flare or glare, which is a real pain. Now, if you take the cover off, it takes beautiful photographs, especially with the flash. But if you put it back on, it doesn't. But I can't walk around with the cover off the back of my phone all the time because the battery will fall out. So until I get that sorted out and get a new rear cover, or manage to sort of, I don't know, polish the glass, or I might even take the little plastic bit out and just leave it empty, I do need a little digital to carry around with me. And I did have a little Olympus, but the problem with that is it took XD cards and they're difficult to get hold of. But I've got plenty of SD cards, and so, for example, in this little Nikon now, I've got a 2GB SD card, which means that it can take well over 1,000 photographs at its finest 4MP JPEG setting, and it also does 640x480 video with sound as well. So that's going to be good to have a play around with that. Now, before we go on to the Retinet, I need to chat about our sponsor for the podcast. And that, as you know by now, is GoToMeeting. And GoToMeeting is a web-based service that enables you to be able to have online meetings with people all over the world. So you've got business contacts in London, or I don't know, LA, New York, Leeds, Oldham, Manchester, Cardiff, Carlisle, and you want to have a meeting with them, or you want to show them something on your computer. By using GoToMeeting, you can have a conference call where you're all chatting to each other on voice over IP, but the difference is that the people on the other end of the phone line can see what's on your desktop computer. So they can see your PowerPoint presentations, they can see what you're looking at the web, they can see the designs or the photographs you've taken. It's really, really simple. All you've got to do is give them a ring and say, look, go to GoToMeeting, this is the meeting ID, put that in, and then bang, they'll see your desktop of your computer, and then you can crack on with a really productive meeting from there. And you don't have to worry about the lost time in travel, the lost money in travel, which is probably the most important thing, and the lost productivity as well. So all you've got to do, if you want to try it out for 30 days, is go to gotomeeting.com/techpodcast. That's gotomeeting.com/techpodcast, and you'll get a 30-day trial to try GoToMeeting out, as I'm sure you'll love it. Okay, so the sort of final half of the podcast this week is about the Kodak Retinet camera, or more accurately, the photographs I finally got out of the Retinet, which I got it last year from the car boot sale. The Kodak Retinet is what's called a viewfinder camera from the 1950s and 1960s. I think they first started building them in the 1940s. The viewfinders are the cheap versions of the rangefinders, in the fact that with a rangefinder type film camera, when you look through the viewfinder, it has a way of telling you whether your subject is in focus or not. Whereas with the viewfinder type cameras, there is no way of telling whether your subject is in focus. You've got to estimate the distance. So the way it works is you kind of wander up to the thing you want to take a photograph, and if it's a person, you sort of think, well, I think they're about 10 feet away, so you look down on the dial for the lens, and you turn the lens focus ring round to sort of 10 feet, And then there's no exposure meter as well, so you get a light meter out and you see, okay, so if I'm using ISO 200 film, I need to be shooting at f8 at 250th per second, and you put that in, and then you wind the camera on, and then finally you can take your photograph. So it's fully manual. So I got this camera and I wanted to put some film through it, so I put some old Kodak colour film I got at the car boot sale as well, I think, that may well have been expired, I can't really remember. But the thing is, when you're sort of checking out a new old camera like this one, that is obviously could be about 40 years old, you haven't got a clue whether the photographs have come out. There's so much that it could go wrong. You could have light leaks, which is where the seals that are around sort of the back of the camera maybe have rotted or fallen out, so that there's light coming in and exposing the film before it should be or more likely, there's always a chance that the mechanical clockwork bits of the camera are no longer working accurately anymore. So instead of when you set it for 250th per second, maybe it's got a bit, you know, sticky inside or a bit worn, and instead of being 250th of a second, it's actually, you know, a 60th of a second, and that makes it incredibly difficult, if not impossible, to get correctly exposed photographs. Especially as what you find a lot of the time with some of these older cameras, as they wear out, it might be accurate at, say, 500th of a second, but it's not accurate when you get down to, say, an 1/8 of a second. So it's a bit of hit and miss whether you're actually going to get any photographs out of these old cameras. But this one was in good nick. It was clean, didn't have any mildew or mould in the lens, it wasn't rusty. Yeah, seemed like a nice little camera. So we went down to Boots on Saturday, I think it was, dropped the film in for their 1 hour processing, went off, did a bit of shopping with Suzanne, came back, opened the packet up rather feverishly, and lo and behold, I was really pleased to see, I think, all the photographs had come out. And most of them were okay as well. They were reasonably in focus, most of them, and the colours were nice, and the exposure seemed okay as well. Now, as far as exposure goes, I'm not entirely sure, but I'm pretty sure if you go somewhere like Boots or any photo lab where they're developing your photos, I think what they do is, when it's going through the system, they do... it's not just the straight develop and print. I'm pretty sure that they have automatic systems in place that will lighten and darken photographs, so that if you have underexposed a photo or overexposed it too much, that they will adjust that in the developing process, so your prints are more likely to come out looking reasonable. So it could be that that worked. But I remember when we were down at the beach taking some of the photographs, and I took my light meter out and I took a meter reading. I think I was meant to be shooting at like f16 at 200th of a second, which, as you know, is the Sunny 16 rule, which means that if you're in a bright sunny day, you set your shutter to f16 and then set your aperture to f16 and your shutter speed will be 1 over whatever the ISO of your film would be, and I was running ISO 200 film, I think, so my shutter speed was 200th and I started shooting away. And to be honest, I got a bit bored with taking exposures because they never really changed that much, and so I just started guessing. To be honest, if it got a little bit darker, I went from f16 sort of down to f11 or f8, and everything seemed to work all right. And it's quite liberating to work with a device, with a camera, where you're disconnected from all that technology you normally get with your digital cameras. You know, when you're running in, even when you're running in aperture priority or manual mode, you know, the camera's giving you so much information with things like the histogram, or whether, you know, so you can check whether your photograph's under or overexposed, with things like the fact that you can see the photograph you've just taken on the back of your camera. Obviously, what that means is that when you are doing things like that with your digital camera, although it means you can adjust your photographs to get them more how you want them to be, it does mean you're kind of wasting a little bit of time and you're kind of doing things back to front. Because I guess the real way we should be sort of doing photography is you're in front of a scene, or you're thinking about a scene, you're visualizing a scene, and you should make all your decisions to take the photograph before you press the shutter. You know, you should be thinking, right, what exposure do I need, what aperture do I want for depth of field for the artistic look of it, should I use some exposure compensation to make the scene darker, maybe it's sunset, or maybe I want to blow out the highlights and make it a real high key image, so I'm going to deliberately overexpose the image, and then you take the shot and then you move on, rather than kind of take the shot and then do all the tweaking afterwards. I'm not saying it's wrong to do it the other way, but it would be nice to do things, get things right in camera first time more often. So that's really nice, and you can't really beat the pleasure of not knowing whether some photographs are going to come out, and then you go into the lab and you get them and they do come out, and you're pleasantly surprised as well, because although the ones I've shown on the Flickr stream are fairly mundane shots around Gosport, things like the Spinnaker Tower in Portsmouth and the beach down at Stokes Bay, I took some shots of Oliver and Suzanne and they came out really nice as well. I haven't put them up on Flickr, but they're really nice photographs. The colour's great, the sharpness is fine for the images. Obviously, if you look at them with any scanned film image, because I got a disc from Boots as well, Boots the chemist who develops it, if you get in close, obviously you get lots more grain than you would on a digital file, but they're still, you know, they still look nice, and I've got the prints for them as well. And I'm not ever, you know, going to be a purely film shooter, but I think by doing these things, by going and trying different film systems, I think you do learn something. It's like having a little workshop every time you try one of these different cameras. You know, with the, I remember when I first got the Minolta SRT-101, the film 35mm film SLR with the 50mm 1.4 lens on the front. That was a real revelation, because it taught me to, you know, look around the viewfinder a lot more, simply because instead of being able to shoot 500 photographs on a photo book, you've only got 24 or 36, and so it slowed me down and made me think about composition a lot more. With things like using the Instax Mini, like today, you kind of, you take that idea even further, because, you know, you've only got 10 shots, and you know each shot's costing you 50p. You know, so you take that little time to think, right, if the person's sitting here, what light's going to be hitting them? You know, what angle should I be at? Because you can't keep flicking and saying, oh, that's not quite right, let's take another photograph, because that's boring for your subjects, but also it's, you know, you're going to run out of film pretty fast. And then, you know, using something like the Retinette, I mean, you're totally divorced from the controls of the fully automatic camera with this, you know, and you're letting go and saying, well, yeah, what should the exposure be? Well, I don't know, let's just put in f8 and 1/125th of a second, see what happens, you know, and you'd be amazed at the times it comes out right. And the other really good reason for trying and using these different camera systems is that when you've finished using them and you pick up your digital camera again, whether that be, you know, a compact, a super zoom, or say my Canon 350D, it feels really, really nice to use the camera, and you can really appreciate the amazing technological advances we've had, you know, in the past 10 years with digital cameras, with the clarity of the image, the speed that the camera works, you know, the fact that you do have things like the histogram to help you with under and overexposure, and that you can see your photographs in the camera just after you've taken them. And when you put your pictures on your computer, you know, the quality of modern sensors is really quite unbelievable, and the fact that, you know, if you want to add film or vignetting or cross-processing, you can do that afterwards. But I think if you shoot film, you appreciate the good sides of digital all that much more. Okay, well, that's round about it for this week. Just want to quickly say that SEL will be taking a couple of weeks summer sabbatical. So don't worry when you don't see the show in the feed next week and the week after, and I think the week after as well, but we'll be back sometime in September. And remember, if you've got any questions or comments, still send them through to scalespeeder@gmail.com. I'll be able to add them to any future podcasts or maybe posts on the blog. Thanks to Everyday Jones, who do the intro and outro music. You can find their stuff for free download at podsafeaudio.com. Thanks everybody for taking part in the Flickr photo group and adding their photos of the pool and taking part in the discussions there. Thanks for everybody for posting their comments on rumnumphoto.com. But most of all, thanks to you for downloading and listening to the podcast. My name's Rob from rumnumphoto.com, and hopefully pretty soon I'll see you on Flickr.